Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks. You're listening to Mud Toe at Midnight with your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Well, we've got a lot to cover, so let's get right to it. First of all, many apologies for my having missed the show past week. I had, as many of you know, a little bit of minor surgery done on Thursday. I spent most of the day Friday scrambling around trying to get medications lined up and so forth, and I was also planning on traveling to my parents for a week here, which I'll get to talk about that in a minute. And when I got here, I just kind of crashed, you know, tension, or I don't know what word I want to say. The sort of energy expenditure on sort of anxiety or reversing said anxiety. This took a lot out of me. The experience of the 2 or 3 days took a lot out of me. And I just, as soon as I got here, I hit the bed, and when I woke up the next morning, was going on Facebook and sort of absentmindedly sort of looking for the link for last night's show, and then I remembered, oh, I didn't do it. So again, very sorry if you were out there looking for that. I'll try to make up for that with tonight's effort if I can. But all of this week, well, let me step back a little bit. The last 2 weeks, I've been off of work, this temporary assignment I've been doing. We were doing for like 6 or 7 weeks, where I was grading standardized tests. And, you know, the way that goes is that there used to be, you know, always like the five, you know, multiple choice, A, B, C, D, and E was none of the above. And then you just, the kids would fill in the bubble sheets, and they put them in the Scantrons and tell you your score. But at some point, someone decided, no, we ought to be having at least a few questions where we gauge the kids' thought process just a bit. So, but I mean, if you're going to do questions like that, you get questions that are going to be written, you have to have people to read them. So it works out well for me, since I have a little bit of an educational background. They hired me and for the last 6 weeks. And then I've been off the past two, and then next week I'm going back on for 2.5, and then very likely will be done for the spring and have to find some other way to generate cash. But I knew this, you know, this 2-week window was coming, so it was very difficult. I can't quite remember. There was a time when I used to work a full-time job. I just can't remember how I used to manage a personal business at a time when you're working all day and you can't get anything done during the day. I found it to be very, very difficult trying to figure that out once again. So I had this 2-week period coming along, you know, where I could get some stuff done. And then the first week of the 2 weeks ended up being pretty much taken up by that whole medical thing, because I had to go and get some tests done before, because they were going to put me under general anesthesia, which I haven't done for like 30 years. I just got my wisdom teeth out when I was 18. This is like the first time I'd ever done, so I had to go and get a chest x-ray and an EKG and answer a bunch of questions, get some blood work done, just so they could, I mean, they were wanted to ascertain that I would not die during the anesthesia before they decided, you know, go ahead and do it. So there was that, and then getting things lined up. My social worker took me to the hospital and back. You know, obviously all day Thursday was taken up with the procedure itself, and being, you know, put under anesthesia once I came out of it, of course you're not ready to just jump up and start doing stuff again. I pretty much slept the whole day away, and then, as I said, the next Friday was trying to get other details lined out. So that's, you know, I didn't get a chance to get a whole lot done that week. The second week, which is this past week, the one that's just ending, I've been here at my parents' house, and a lot of that has been preparation for possibly moving here if I'm not able to scare up some other source of income. If I don't, I will no longer be able to keep my apartment. And I got here, it was odd because when I arrived here, my mother already had my room ready, which was just kind of odd because I thought, you know, we're still just kind of talking about this. We're not at the point where this is actually going to be happening. And it was, you know, I'm 49 years old, and this would be the fifth time in my life, in my adult life, that I've had to come home and live with my parents for a while. And I find that it's really weighing on me. I think of it as a sign that I failed. And you know, people say, no, that's not what it is. Well, okay, we can say that. You know, it's particularly important to me because I come on this radio show and I write a blog and so forth, where I sort of represent myself as a reasonably knowledgeable person who has something interesting and applicable to say on a wide variety of topics. And at the same time, I open myself up to this criticism of, why should we listen to you? You live with your parents. You've moved back in with your parents 5 times. And you know, I don't have a good answer for that. So it does weigh on me. And I find after having spent the week here, I find that it interferes with a lot of it. I know it interferes with my creative process. I have been totally unable to write since I've been here. I didn't write a blog last week, and I sort of rationalized it by saying, well, I wrote an extra one the week before. I wrote one just before I went into the hospital. So I said, well, I've got the proper number of blog entries. I don't have the proper number of radio shows, but I do have the proper number of blog entries at least, so I don't have to be concerned about that, except I am concerned about that. And of course, I'm trying to get the book done, too. Now, I know a possible way around that would be to find my library card or get a new one and just work out there. I mean, that's something I might be able to do, but it's not so much that I'm attached to the place I'm in now. I'm attached to having a place. I'm attached to my independence. And attachment is problematic in many ways. So perhaps this is an interesting and perhaps this is a useful exercise for me to go to, letting go of, if not my independence, at least we'll start off with letting go of the feeling that I have to have my own place. And that's going to be difficult because I know I want to run back. I want to run back to my apartment. I want to run back now. It's not that it's bad here. It's not that it's cruel or unkind in any way. It's just that the feeling is that the time for this has passed. The time for this passed a long time ago. And I need to be flipping a switch somehow to make, you know, I'm never going to be the prototypical all-American working for a living kind of guy. That's not going to happen. Yeah, I tried that and it didn't work. But I at least need to get to some kind of place that's, you know, not where I am now, where I'm providing, that would be the main point would be that I'm providing for myself, or that I'm in, this isn't going to sound right, but I guess I should go ahead and say it, but I'm in the care of someone who wants to, and not my folks. But where am I going with that? I've seriously considered, as I say, I've been in a lot of contact with my social worker, my caseworker, and you know, the subject it was talked about, you know, ways that there are shelters, there are pantries, you know, that it's not 100% necessary. If I don't have an apartment, that I couldn't live in the city. And I was thinking, well, you can call my mother and explain that to her, because she would not be happy with that idea at all. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not dying to stay in a shelter either. Certainly be a different experience, something to write about. But I hear, obviously you hear all the horrific stories that come out of that. So maybe the idea is to poll my vast circle of friends and see who might let me sleep on their couch for like a week at a stretch, and then maybe cycle around and then maybe pop back to my folks' house for 1 week during that cycle, and sort of stretch it out and stretch that contact out. And I know my daughter would be willing to host me probably for longer than a week at a stretch. I just feel like that's something I don't want to ask her to do. She's a mother with a young baby and a husband, and they're a young family, and it's just not right. I don't feel it's right for me to impose myself on them in that way, especially if they live in a small apartment. If they lived in a house and they could stick me in a room someplace, that would be different, but it's not different. I don't feel, again, I just don't feel right about making that kind of imposition on her. So, something's going to break loose and, becoming very frustrated with the traditional job search process. And, wrote my job advisor a email this week saying I didn't want to do it anymore. And now we've been back in contact, and she sort of brought me back into fold at least a little bit. There's one job in particular she wants me to follow through on. But, when you get so many, not even rejections, you just don't hear from it, right? Now, I said, but I did have that sort of a glimmer that she thinks that my job advisor thinks there's this one job that their organization has some sort of influence on. So, here we go. But maybe, I don't know, maybe. So we do that. And then at the same time, yes, just today, actually, I got a call from the university department that I used to work for. That's something similar to what I used to do has opened up. And I talked for a few minutes to a very nice graduate student, and she had agreed to keep me on the list, which tells me that they're talking to a lot of other people. So once we got off the phone, I got on the email and got in touch with all the people I used to work with over there that I know are still there, and said, you got to get over to Dr. Brosnan's office right away and tell her that I'm applying for this position. I'm just going to work that unfair advantage to the greatest advantage that I possibly can. And, maybe something will come from it. I enjoyed the work I did at the university. I would enjoy doing something similar again. And it's important to me outside of having a job that I can pay my bills and be independent. Is also that it's something that I like doing, that I don't have to hate myself for going to that job every day. Am I being too picky? For a man of my age who's been out of work for almost 2 years, does that make me a bad guy? I don't know. But my feeling is that whatever it is that I'm going to do is not going to come to me from the traditional route. Plan for this week was, apart from talking to my mother and father about how this moving thing might work, my plan for this week was to put together a lot of resumes and cover letters. And they're working sort of in conjunction with my employment advisor, my job advisor. And it just didn't happen. I think part of it is because of this sort of stifling of my creative energies that seems to happen here, but also just a general frustration with process and a feeling because it hasn't gone well so far, for the last 2 years. And I haven't even gotten an interview with anybody in 2 years, except for the one job that I did with working with developmentally disabled people in the homes. But I'm pretty sure everybody who walks through the door is upright and breathing gets an interview for that. Not saying it's an easy job, and saying that they need people, and they will take just about anybody. But anyway, beyond that, nothing has come out of the job search. So I really feel whatever it is I'm going to do is going to come to me in some other way. Whether it's, you know, because I know somebody, I'll take that. And there are plenty of other people ahead of me in line who would take that same advantage. Does it come from just a sort of continued patchwork quilt of these part-time jobs, which right now I don't have anything scheduled beyond the next 3 weeks. That doesn't mean that more stuff isn't going to come along. I did have a call earlier this week from one of the temporary services that does the standardized patient work that I do. So I guess it's a matter of, I don't know what it's a matter of. I really don't. I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know how I was going to say how bread is going to come to me, and I'm aware of the fact that bread is a sort of a nickname for money, but that's not how I mean it. I mean bread in the sense of how I'm going to derive sustenance. And there's almost a sense of freedom in that feeling of having reached the end of something. I remember feeling that at the time when I lost my job and was forced to abandon my PhD program at approximately, those two things happened at approximately the same time within like a few weeks of each other. The feeling that I had come to the end of something. And maybe I hadn't quite come to the end of it, or maybe this is a different thing now that I'm coming to the end to. Coming to the end of. But, I sure wish I knew what it was. I'm at a loss to explain this feeling that's sort of going through me right now. It's a sort of technique that an old meditation teacher taught me about body scans, what's going on in your body right now. And when I find myself in this kind of space where there's some sort of odd energy or emotion that's flowing through me right now, and I can feel it. I feel it very much in sort of in my sternum. It's a bony kind of feeling. It's something I just like, almost like I stuck my finger in something. You know, I mean, it's kind of flowing. I don't know if you've ever stuck your finger in a light socket. I don't suggest that you do it, by the way. I have once or twice accidentally in my life stuck my finger into a light socket, so that it's kind of vibrating feeling. It's almost how it is. So what does this? It's this technique for reducing anxiety. That's the intention. But I think it may also be some sort of insight into what, I don't know, whether it's the source of the emotion and whether it would even help me at all to know what the source of that emotion is. I know, just feeling something electric in my bones. Not a fearful experience, not an anxious experience, but an unusual experience, one that I can't find a label for, one that I don't have a source for, or a point of reference. Why should I feel this way when I'm talking about the end of this current, I don't think, I was going to say the end of this current path. I don't think the path per se is coming to an end. This, I guess, maybe branch of the path, I don't know, getting sort of more kind of Native American philosophy than I really wanted to with this, but there is that. There is certainly an element to it, the Buddhist thought as well, the idea of attachments and letting go, of of this thing that possibly no longer serves me, and why do I want to possess it? Why do I want to keep this life going? One of the things that I was thinking as I was writing my sort of tortured email to my job advisor was, you know, I just want my old life back. So I was thinking about, what do I want? I was trying to tell her in this email what I wanted. And what I wanted, what came out, was I want my old life back. Question is, which old life are we talking about? We're talking about the 2 years ago old life, you know, I was doing the university thing. Are we talking about the 7 or 8 years ago old life where I was working and I had my video business and scraping by living in this old dilapidated apartment in a different city and sort of participating in the underworld life, not directly participating, but kind of dipping my toe into that and thinking about what it would be like to live life in that way. So I mean, is that what I'm saying I want back? Go back to when I was teaching school, or go back to when I was working in industry, go back to when I was an undergraduate and not really knowing of what a real concern was. Let me go my old life when I had a wife and a child and a house. Is that what I want back? You know, words, those kind of words flow so easily. I want my old life back. But they came without my thinking what the elements were. And, you know, there, in each of those cases, there's good elements and there's bad elements. But before, you know, perhaps I should think it out more thoroughly before I ask the universe to give me something back. Because you know, the universe might make assumptions that I'm not, that I don't intend. Also, I'm told the universe doesn't understand negation, so you got to be careful. You can't say that I don't want this, because I guess the machinery, the clockwork doesn't quite get that. We are 23 minutes into the show. And now I have to decide, because there are just a number of things that have built up over the past 2 weeks, so I spent way too much time on this one. I want to quick update on what I spent most of the show on 2 weeks ago, which was the, I definitely don't want this to become a show about my sex life, but I'm sure you don't either. But I had talked about the fact that, you know, I'd had a 5-year period of involuntary celibacy, and I was concerned about the circumstances under which it had ended. It was sort of a, it was a quid pro quo. It was just someone that I help out, and she asked me if I wanted to lie down with her, and I did to say and know her in a biblical sense. I wanted to do it that way. We had sex. That's what happened. And we did. And now I'm concerned about the position in which I've put myself. And my concerns have sort of come true. I can't say they completely have come true. But I received the phone call I thought I might receive, or actually one that was sort of similar to, let's see what happened. I received the call from this woman, and she said, "Hey, I need, can you help me out with this? Can you help me out with that?" You know, that's how we get in contact. She calls me and needs me to help her with something. And so I get this call, and, you know, I'm at my parents' house, and as it happened, My car is in the shop. I bring my car here because the car used to belong to my father, and my father's mechanic has worked on the car for years, and he has, you know, wonderful way of making it, you know, continue to go forward. So I didn't have a way to get, you know, I had to drive back to the city, about an hour and a half drive. Well, this young lady, she wanted to come and pick me up and then take me back to the city, and I was going to help her out with, you know, she knew what she needed help with. And we were going to do our thing, and then she was going to take me back home in her car. And I was like, first of all, I mean, I don't even want to think about it. I've never seen her car. I don't even want to think about what sort of shape it's probably in. And if she's going to, you know, come, you know, an hour and a half out on a very hot day, come back an hour and a half, just put a lot of sort of, what's the word I want? If she's going to be bad, it could possibly be bad for the car. She could get stranded, and then I would be responsible, you know, for coming out and finding her and all that stuff. The heck of a thing being, what she wanted me to do was take her grocery shopping. And the hell of a thing was, I said, look, she doesn't need me to take her grocery shopping. You know, she's a young woman with a baby. She can go, I mean, pantries would, they'd fill her car up to the roof. You know, there's absolutely no problem with her being able to get food if she needs it. So this is, you know, this was my response. You know, I can, you know, I'd love to come see you. You know, I'd love to come help you out. I'm not in a position where I can. My suggestion, you know, if your car is running all right, it must be, if you offered to come and get me, is to, you know, go find a pantry. And, you know, I know where several of them are if you need information. And she just got all bent out of shape. You know, I offered her, you know, come down there and get you, and you don't want me to come get you now. I thought you liked me, and it's just every bit the emotional typhoon that I thought it might become, you know, once that line was crossed. And, you know, I haven't heard from her since, and I haven't tried to get in touch with her, and it's probably convincing myself, you know, it's probably better that way. I mean, it's definitely better that way. I know it's better that way, but I still think about her. I'm just attracted to the ones who aren't good for me. Can't help it. I hope that doesn't make you think less of me. At the same time, I don't do this show so that people will venerate me in some way. I mean, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm here to speak what I'm moved to speak, in the hopes that somebody out there needs to hear it. I don't know who that is, and we'll never know who that is. But my job with the show is, if spirit moves me to talk about it, and that's what I felt moved to talk about just now, to share with you and share a experience that some of you might shy away from. Experience that, you know, years ago I would have shied away from. Are you kidding? That I would be involved in something like that? I don't apologize for it. I recognize that it's not. I recognize it's not the smartest thing I ever could have possibly done. But it's a part of my life, and I have to be honest about that, and I have to deal with it. I have run out of time, so I do thank you for calling and listening. I should be back home next week and be able to use my handy-dandy computer, so the show should sound a little better. So do join me next week if you feel so moved, and thanks for being here. Good night.